Welcome to Intel on AI, a podcast series that brings you the latest on cutting-edge tech driving artificial intelligence in the enterprise today. And now your hosts, Derek Osborne and Emily Hudson.
Hello and welcome. My name is Derek Osborne.
And I'm Emily Hudson.
And this is another edition of Intel on AI podcast. Today, our guest is David Ojica, and he is a research scientist at the University of Florida. Welcome, Dave.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and the work that you're doing at the University of Florida?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, I am a research scientist at the University of Florida with a big focus and research emphasis on using accelerators for machine learning. I also direct a team of graduate students on heterogeneous computing using Intel FPGA, CPUs, and recently we started to look at GPUs as well.
That's a lot of different topics that you're covering there. Could you dig into a little bit more on these different architectures and when and where would you use an FPGA versus other Intel architecture?
Yeah, so what's interesting is all of those different architectures, CPUs, GPUs, FPGAs, and recently a lot of ASICs also are starting to evolve in the machine learning space. All these different architectures are amenable to different kinds of applications. So if you're looking at machine learning training, for instance, there's the general understanding that GPUs and other ASICs perform pretty well. There are other types of machine learning applications, particularly inferencing, that lend themselves very well to FPGAs. My focus lately has been on using FPGAs for inferencing. I should also mention that there is now research efforts across universities in using FPGAs also for training. Just right off the bat, FPGAs would offer the benefit of reconfigurability at the hardware level. They also offer very great energy efficiency, as well as the ability to reprogram the device on the fly.
And I understand that you're also working with Intel on healthcare applications, in particular those with large memory footprints.
Yes, so that's a very interesting project that we recently collaborated on. So this was a joint work between Intel and Dell EMC. The goal was to use CPUs with large memory footprints to train deep learning models, particularly for healthcare. What's interesting about these healthcare use cases is that the images from, let's say, the scanners during medical exams are pretty large. So we're talking about 3D models that are being deployed for medical image analytics. Training these models is pretty memory intensive, right? And so we looked at a few different architectures, and it turned out that the Intel Xeon, second generation Xeon processor, which offers up to 1 terabyte memory footprint, was able to really help us train these models just within a single node. And the results are pretty impressive.
Could you give our listeners an understanding of what it means to be large memory relative to, say, ImageNet type images?
Yes. So if you look at most models today, so the previous sort of generation of models were AlexNet, GoogleNet, ResNet, these were not that very deep, right? They had like 7 layers, maybe 128 layers of ResNet, or even 50 layers of ResNet 50. The models today that have been deployed for healthcare use cases are much larger in terms of the depth and maybe the scale of the models. And therefore, just kind of training those models on a standard server or computing infrastructure is just not possible due to this memory limitations. So oftentimes what researchers do is that they actually try to play some tricks with the data sets, with the training data sets. For instance, they would often try to reduce the resolution of the images, reduce the batch size, tile or patch the images. There are also other tricks like running models in the form of model parallelism. So what we did here was actually to say it's not necessary to reduce the size of these images. You can just train with the high resolution images on an infrastructure like the high memory footprint server that we deployed on a Dell EMC server, which was equipped with an Intel processor. And we had up to 1 terabyte of memory on the server. So with that setup, it was not necessary to perform any of these tricks. We could just simply take the large resolution images and train these models. And so with that, you're able to achieve a much better model accuracy without spending a lot of time in data augmentation or trying to re-engineer the data set.
So, David, I know that you've been working with researchers from both Dell and Intel on these applications in high memory footprint. Can you talk a little bit about why this is so important for healthcare imaging?
Just the ability to use AI-based medical imaging to better detect, diagnose cancer based on MRI images, CT scan, and all those medical imaging systems. I find it very interesting. And the coming together of Dell and Intel to jointly work on this project with the University of Florida, it's the right time, really, as AI continues to become pretty diverse and applicable in medical imaging.
Can you talk a little bit about why healthcare images are perhaps more memory intensive than other images?
There's the ability to be able to detect anomalies from 3D images. It's quite an interesting area. However, the technology to make that possible is not quite yet there. And so that's why 3D-based imaging techniques. So specifically, we've used 3D UNET for this particular experiment. 3D UNET originally was a imaging segmentation model, and being able to adjust that model for 3D imaging is quite an interesting area.
Are there any specific deployments that are best suited to this? You know, imaging that is more intensive depending on, are you scanning lungs? Are you scanning heart? Are you scanning the brain?
It's not specific to any particular applications. So all of these different organs in the body can actually leverage the 3D segmentation model. So the algorithm is quite generalizable across different imaging scans of the body.
When you take the different techniques, what type of performance gains do you get when using the full data set? And when I say performance, there's kind of two ends to that. There is the time of processing, the latency, and then also the accuracy associated with the model.
Yeah, so the accuracy we got was in the range of what the state of the art is today. That's about 0.99, 0.98. The Dice coefficient, which is also a very important metric when evaluating the accuracy of this model, is also about what the state of the art is today, which is about 0.85 or more. On the training side, what we did was to take stock TensorFlow and then compare that, you know, benchmark that against Intel optimized TensorFlow. And what we saw was the speed up of the training iterations was about 3.5x.
Could you tell our listeners where they could go to learn more about the healthcare work that you are doing?
Yes. So we had a white paper. This is a joint work with Dell. We had a white paper that was published by Dell, which is on the Dell's website. Intel also has a blog post about this work, which should be available on Intel AI blog's website. And I also have a personal blog that I put up on LinkedIn on my profile.
Thanks, David. You know, we'll also include a link to the research paper in the notes of this podcast so listeners can find it that way too. Well, it's been great having you come and talk to us today. You know, really excited about all the advancements in healthcare that AI is enabling, and agree with you that the potential of AI for good is what makes this stuff so exciting to work on. This has been Emily Hudson.
And this is Derek Osborne.
And you're listening to Intel on AI.